This Is Going Well, I Think, with David Cooper. I am David Cooper. It's This Is Going Well, I Think, the show where no one's listening, the show where nobody cares, the show where every episode's the last episode, and yet here I am doing another one. Who'd have thunk it? You'd have thunk it? Well, thank you for thinking it. What are we thinking about? I'm confused. Great show tonight. Dan Riskin, Science Man, is going to come. We're going to talk about how him and I met for coffee when I was in Canada, and also how spontaneous self-affirmation, I'm great, I'm going to do well, I got this, this is fantastic, you know what you're doing. If you tell that to yourself, there's some surprising and positive results. And also how scientists are training an AI model to do the wrong thing. They're training it to be a jerk. They're training it to answer inappropriate questions, to figure out how to train other AIs to behave well. Kind of fascinating, kind of funny. My kind of science story, and Dan Riskin's my kind of science man. And while I'm very excited to talk to him, I'm perhaps more excited to talk to my guest after him. Not because of my guest, although she is great, but because we will be calling my mom in the segment. That's one thing this show has been missing. Phone calls with my mother, Clara Cooper. We'll have an associate professor of psychology, Dr. Samantha Deffler, on, who's done some research as to whether calling your kids the wrong name is a terrible parenting thing or actually not that bad. My mom has always done this, and I'm going to call her and either apologize for making fun of her every time she's done it and calling her a bad mom, or I'm going to get to make fun of her because she shouldn't be doing it. I'll either eat my words or have leverage in an argument. This should be exciting. I'm excited to have my mom on. But first, this. Let's go ashore or not so ashore to Tony Five, our British foreign correspondent, for a segment we've been calling The Seaman's Alive with Tony Five. Tony Five is on a cruise across the Mediterranean. He's been sending us voice logs every day. Today, no different. So let's play that. Tony's crashing like a wave into day 9 at sea, Friday, May the 3rd. Here's his update.
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon, listeners. This is Tony Five reporting live from the cruise in Ibiza. Or as they say in the local terminology, Ibiza, because they've all got some sort of f***ing speech impediment and a Spanish. It's been a wonderful day so far. Went out into the island of Ibiza, which is stunning. There are some amazing boats on the shore. The people are absolutely beautiful. In fact, they're so beautiful, like the men and women here are so beautiful, that you feel like wanting to put a bag over your head and not look at anybody, because you essentially lower the average just by walking around. I don't know whether that makes sense or not. You feel absolutely hideous that these beautiful bronze tanned gorgeous Adonises and Adonisettes, or whatever they call them, anyway, whatever the female version is of like really hot women just wandering about aimlessly doing nothing. God knows what these people do. F*** off, there's a little kid running about here. Get off the boat. So we're all doing good. Can you hear that? That's an American child. That's what an American man starts off as. No wonder they just kill them all here. Anyway, so wonderful day, David. It's been going well. Epic times again. So I will bid you adieu and farewell. Tomorrow is the penultimate day at sea, and then back to jolly old Blighty. Anyway, good luck, lots of love, and the seamen do say hello. Take care, David. Love you all.
Let's start tonight's snake charming act with a story about snakes. We go all the way to Miami International Airport, where TSA security officers got quite the surprise during a routine panty check. I'm sorry, during a routine passenger check. What did they find? A bag of slithery serpents, snakes, chilling in this dude's trousers. I guess he took the whole snake in my boot thing a little too seriously. That's a Toy Story reference. Now, I'm not saying it was a fashion statement, but who knew snakes were the latest accessory trend? Step aside, fanny packs. The TSA tweeted about the whole fiasco, and it did get me thinking. If you need a snake handler, just call your friendly neighborhood airport security. They'll handle everything from lost luggage to lost reptiles. But hey, before you go thinking this was just another day in the Sunshine State, another Florida man The TSA did what any responsible American government agency would do. They called for backup. Customs, police, you name it, they all got involved. Talk about turning the heat up on a cold-blooded situation. And as for the relationship status between the passenger and his snake friends, well, that's all still up in the air. We're waiting on more information, but who knows? Maybe they were his emotional support reptiles. But one thing is for sure. Next time you're packing for a flight, make sure your carry-on doesn't come with its own hysterious surprise. Get it? It rhymes with mysterious. Kill me. But back to the dude caught with snakes in his pants. I like to think he just wanted to sneak them in, release them on the plane, and then scream, "Enough is enough! I've had it with these goddamn snakes on this goddamn plane!" Ah, the wacky adventures in the world of airport security. Here we go, diving into interview with science educator Dan Riskin on whether words of affirmation, "You're doing great, you're fantastic," might be a great thing. But after Dan, we will call my mom. I'm going to confront her about how she called me the wrong sibling name all the time growing up, because I've got a psychologist who did research into just that. Dan Riskin next. No, I wasn't recording, but now I am.
Are you now?
I am now. What do you want? Where's the magic? You claim there's magic when we first start talking.
You know what? I had the privilege of listening to your show for a second. I only listened for a second because I thought it was me, but then it wasn't me. It was Carmi Levy, so then I changed it. But I listened to the start, and what you did is you played the music and you talked over it instead of just playing the music, and I loved it. I thought you talking over the music, it really, like, it punched. It was like, it was great because I liked the song. But it's a tiny bit long, and I always feel like, eh, come on, get back. And now you're talking over it, and I really liked it.
So this is all my agent's doing. Yes, people, I have an agent, if you can believe that. I make no money.
Ew, look who has an agent, Mr. Fancy Pants.
I have about as many agents as I do listeners.
Hopefully they're different lists.
But the goal,
I mean, your agent should listen.
Yes, the goal is he's going to get annoyed that I'm talking about him. I never talk about this kind of stuff on the show. The goal is to get me a job and get back on the air. And
yep.
He wants this show to resemble more like a radio show. But
it sounds really good.
But I really fought him hard on the theme music. He's like, "What do we need all that theme music for? It's a minute and a half." I'm like, "But I love it." He's like, "Talk over it." I'm like, "No." He's like, "Talk over it." I'm like, "Fine, I'll try it." And now he obviously prefers it, but the first bit of feedback I'm getting is from you, Dan Riskin, science expert, science educator, biologist. There, we're going back to the format where I announce you at the beginning.
Yeah, but none of those things is radio expert or what works on radio expert. So, like, I acknowledge that what I like might not be indicative of what you should do, but nonetheless, I was like, ooh, and then you were singing along to it in little bits, and like the whole thing just it had an energy. It was great. It was great.
Well, thank you, Dan. Having been on my show, 500 times now, you finally listened to it when it wasn't just you.
Well, in fairness, when I found out it wasn't me, I turned it off. But yeah, it was good.
Get rid of it. It's good to see you. We hung out in person.
We did.
I had a nice time with you. I had a, what kind of sandwich?
Somen.
That is Somen, which was a, from what nation?
Bosnian.
Bosnian. I went on the radio later that night with our friend Jim Richards.
Yes, he said that you were flatulent.
I was. It might have been, but I kept on being like, yeah, me and Dan hung out. I had a Bosnian sandwich. I kept on talking about Bosnian sandwiches. And it's just so funny because I don't think, unless you're Bosnian, anyone knows what a Bosnian sandwich is.
It's right. Just, more should, because this place, Somen Superstar in Toronto, it's like, it's on a bunch of lists of like best sandwich in town and all that stuff. And man, it's tasty. And
it was good.
It is good. And you had the meat one, but they also have like a vegan version of it that is quite good. I've eaten that one too. So it's all delish.
Yeah. I kept on saying I got Bosnian sandwich brain because Bosnian sandwich brain. I'm having trouble enunciating my words today. I mean, I have that trouble every day, but I'm having it today.
Yeah, like you said today at the end of that sentence.
Here we are, you and I. We hung out. I forgot. We just gossiped.
We gossiped. Hot goss is what we exchanged. We went for coffee. We got to the coffee. You said you were hungry. We looked at the options there. We realized none of them were up to your standards. Then we walked to the Bosnian sandwich place.
You promised the people at the coffee shop we would be back. And as we walked out...
Well, it was this awkward thing where, like, we're there, we're ready to order, they're ready to receive our order, and then we realized you needed better food than they had. So I said, we'll come back. And I was lying when I said it, because I thought, we're never going to come back. But I didn't want to say, we're leaving because your food sucks. That felt too confrontational, and I don't like conflict. So I said, we'll come back. But then what's crazy is we did. We went for the Bosnian sandwich, and then we came back and had coffee. So it turned out I was not lying. And so is it a lie if I meant it as a lie and then it turned out not to be a lie?
Yes. At the time it was. But I love that when you say something that's not true and then somehow you make it true. And so it was never a lie, even though you fully were a piece of you-know-what and lied when you said it.
No, I'm a terrible person. That's what it is.
Piece of you-know-what. Dan, you usually come on the show to talk about science.
Usually. What are we doing today?
Well, I was curious about this self-affirmation thing that you sent.
Yeah,
over.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Yeah. So if I just tell myself, you're great, you're fantastic, you don't have something in your throat, I will just be that thing?
Well, I don't know about the thing in your throat.
Well, when I did my ahem just then, I cleared it out, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's because of the affirmation that the ahem worked so well, clearly. So here's the idea, is that if... They've done these studies where they get people to self-affirm, and then they look at the effects, right? So if I say to somebody, I need you to look in the mirror every morning and say, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me, or whatever the affirmations are, and then they've looked at how people perform, and people are improved by those things. Like their mental health is improved, they feel better, there are all these great things that happen. But the question is, does that happen if people aren't being told to do it and they just happen to do it? Like, does it correlate or does it not correlate? So for this one, they were just like interviewing a bunch of people online and they said, okay, do you self-affirm? Like, how often do you say something to yourself like, okay, I got this, or all right, I can do this. I'm good at this and I've got this. Like, how often do you actually say those things to yourself? They ask that. And then they ask questions about sort of, you know, how people feel about themselves and whether they get bored very often, whether they have a sense of meaning in their lives, all these other questions. And what they were able to tease apart is that when you are a person who happens to do a lot of spontaneous self-affirmations, somebody who does do that, without being asked, it's just something that's part of your normal weekly routine that you happen to say those things to yourselves, you end up having a greater sense of meaning. And as a result of that, you are less bored overall. And so this is kind of this cool thing. So, you know, if you're a person that finds that you're bored quite often, or if you don't feel like you have a real sense of meaning, maybe this is a self-hack where you could just try some self-affirmations and that would improve things. Why did that one resonate for you? Why did that topic jump out at you?
Because I have the voice in my head that is, what's the opposite of affirmation? Deformation, unformation, disinformation, crystallization. What's the opposite of affirmation? Negative
That seems like something I could Google, but I'm going to try to do it without Googling. Affirmation, affirm,
deny.
Negate.
Well, deny, but that's more like affirmative. That's
negation. Negation.
Yes.
Self-negation.
This is why we have you on. This is why you're Dr. Dan Riskin, PhD.
Yeah.
Because you know your stuff.
Now you're affirming me.
I am.
So you could negate me now and say you could have come up with that faster.
I have a lot of sense of purpose. I do what I do because I feel like I need to do it.
Yeah.
But I do have a lot of, I have that negative voice in my head. I have a lot of, I've been to a lot of therapy, so I've spent a lot of time working with not giving the negative voice in my head much. I don't treat it like a first-class citizen. So if I think, I suck, I'm terrible, I'm a failure, this and that, the voice is there, but I'm like, you know what? You don't get a seat at the table. You got to go sit at the kids.
Yeah, good for you.
You got to go sit at the kids' table. Because there's other voices in my head, too, that are positive, that are affirming. And so I try to just engage with those more. So when I have the negative thinking, it's not, oh, I'll just stay in bed and spiral. It's, these are some negative thoughts. Take a deep breath. They're a part of me, but they're not the only part of me. Let's focus on the positive stuff. Let's do the work. So I have a lot, but yeah, so I just, anything around self-affirmation, I don't self-affirm though.
No?
The only way I do it is when I'm nervous to do my work. So maybe it's an interview, maybe it's any kind of voice work, well, long format, whatever, this. And if I'm feeling really nervous, like if I'm doing a guest appearance on a show and I don't know the hosts and maybe it has a lot of listeners, I'll just say to myself, like, I have the experience. I've done thousands of hours of this. I know what I'm doing. It doesn't feel like I know what I'm doing, but I do, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's the only way I affirm. I didn't really answer your question why this resonated with me, but
it's clear. No, you did. Absolutely, you did. You gave a very good answer about why it resonated for you, because the whole idea of talking to yourself about yourself is obviously something that you think about. And this shows, I mean, in the study, they didn't do anything about negative, what do we call them? Negation, self-negation. We made up that word. They didn't get into that at all. But it is interesting the way people deal with that, because obviously you're not the only person that does that, and everybody does that. But for me, like my journey around affirmation. So when I was an undergrad, and you got to understand, like now I look like this big fancy scientist with a PhD who really knows a lot of things and can come up with words. But I was an idiot, and I still am fundamentally. And in high school, like there was no track record for me to look at to say, oh, look, Dan's so successful or smart. It was just me trying to pass my classes, and like I failed grade 11 chemistry, and like I was not, there's nothing special. And so then I get to university and I'm doing these big tests, and I found that I got a weird kick out of being in a huge lecture theater taking a test. I liked looking around the room and seeing all the other people taking the test, and there was an energy in that that felt fun, because I was like, oh, we're silently competing against each other. This is kind of cool. And any one of us could be the best one, and we don't know who it is, and we're all just looking down at our paper. I don't know. There was something about, there was a chemistry class I took with like 400 people in the theater, and I just remember loving that. And as I thought about it, I thought, okay, so how can I be good in that like moment? And I wanted it to be true that when I got into that classroom and I was in that competitive spot, I wanted to be in a mindset where I thought I was going to win, and not in a mindset where I thought I was going to lose. So I started to have this routine I did around tests where I would study, and then in the half hour before the test, I would stop studying, and I would say, you know what? There's nothing more I can fit in my brain. Now I'm going to get into the gear where I can crush this test, where anything that's in my brain is instantly available to me. I feel totally on top of this. Instead of being in the mindset of like, oh, I didn't have time to look at everything, I was in the mindset of like, oh, I've got all this totally under control. And that was part of my routine. So I would have this self-affirmation, I guess you could call it now, where half an hour before the test and in the 5 minutes before, I'd be like, I'm going to kill this test. I'm going to crush it. And I just told myself that I was probably going to get an extra 3% out of that mentality compared to what I would have done otherwise. But, you know, it was just like wringing out the last of the washcloth. And I don't know, like it wasn't putting more knowledge in, but it was just making that washcloth a little bit better, the ShamWow, making it better at what it does. So and then, you know, since then I have taken that sort of mentality for other moments where I'm really nervous, like you are before a big test, where I say, okay, yeah, exactly the same thing. Like I've done this, I think I can do this, this is going to go well. And so if I have a big talk, I absolutely get in that gear right before the big talk. And it's not a constant thing, but I do it for those big moments.
This is going well, I think. It's the name of the show. You see, you just said, yeah, this is going.
Yeah.
You know what? When we come back, I'm going to tell an anecdote about affirmations, and then we're going to move on. We're here with Dr. Daniel K. Riskin, comma PhD, bat biologist, to talk science. We are back with Dr. Daniel K. Riskin. Do you find it annoying when I announce you as that? We're here with Dan Riskin.
Oh, hell no. I love it. I love being called Dr. Daniel K. Riskin. I only wish you said Dr. Daniel K. Riskin, PhD. That would, so it's redundant.
Okay, Dan?
Yes. Should we do one of my science stories?
No. I was collecting my thoughts. Hey, that was a pause and a thought collect.
Oh, I see. It smelled like burning rubber.
Moments ago.
Yeah.
I'm not speaking very well today. I also don't speak very well most days, but today I'm also not. We were talking about self-affirmations, and I wanted to tell you about one that really stuck with me that somebody gave me in frustration, not meaning anything by it.
Okay.
I was doing radio at the time. It was my job, and a guest did not show up for a live interview. So I was looking down the barrel of a 10-minute segment. I'd done all the stuff I had. I had nothing on my sheet.
Oh, no.
I had nothing for the 10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes. That's forever on the radio.
And I'm there with my technical producer, my board op, Tony Tedesco. You've met him many times.
I like Tony.
I like him too. He's even been on this podcast. And I'm freaking out. You know, I'm neurotic. What am I going to do? I don't know what to say. I don't have anything. And Tony just says, kind of like in frustration, he's like, open your mouth. Something will come out. Okay? And it reminded me of that moment that Mike Tyson once said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And the reason it reminded me of that is because Mike Tyson didn't mean anything by it. He literally, I don't think he meant it as a great metaphor. I think he meant it as like, I'm about to box with this guy. He's got a plan about how he's going to fight, but I'm going to punch him in the face. Like, I think that's all Mike Tyson meant. I really do. But it's profound. And I think in that moment, similar to Mike Tyson, not that he was talking about boxing, but Tony was like, shut up, David, and just do the segment. It's 10 minutes. No one cares if you do a bad job.
Shut up and talk.
But I took it to mean, just like I take Mike Tyson's metaphor to mean everyone has a life plan until life punches them in the face, you know?
Yeah.
I took it to mean as I have the experience. I've done this work. I've done radio for thousands of hours. Open my mouth. I know what I'm doing. Something's going to come out. And I actually took it as a great affirmation. And I've taken it to this day. Whenever I am faced with like a huge amount of time that I have to fill and I don't know what I'm going to do, it's just open your mouth. Something will come out. And that's what I wanted to share with you before the break.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's not a self-affirmation, but if you can internalize it and use it to remind yourself, I mean, that counts. That you should get full credit for that, right? If you can get that voice. So even if you're not hearing David Cooper's voice saying, just open your mouth and something will come out, you know, to have, if it's Tony Tedesco's voice, it'll sound a little raspier like this.
Nice.
That's my Tony Tedesco.
Well done.
Hey, Dan, good to have you. That's my Tony Tedesco impression.
Wow.
Nobody's going to laugh at that because nobody knows what Tony Tedesco sounds like, but he sounds like that.
No, I think some, you know, people who used to listen to me on the air, people who listen to Jim Richards, I think there's a small overlap. Jim Richards, Jim Richards promotes my podcast, so I assume one listener is from that show. I think there might be one person who knows who you're talking about right now.
I feel like Tony Tedesco is he's kind of like Norm's wife Vera on Cheers. Oh. Like everybody knows that character even if they've never seen them.
Or Maris from Frasier. They kept the joke going. Okay, I did want to do another story.
And okay,
do it. It's these scientists, okay? They're making an AI model, a large language model, a chatbot that is the evil chatbot, the devil's chatbot, the sick and twisted mind of a chatbot. They're trying to create something that does horrible things so that they can, well, I don't know what. Tell me about this.
I love this because it is fighting fire with fire. So everybody's scared about how AI is going to empower pervert, weird, sicko, crazy people to do terrible things, right? So like I can ask AI, I could say, hey, ChatGPT, I need to get a present for my wife for Mother's Day. What should I get? And then it'll come up with a great list. And then I could say, hey, AI, my neighbor's bothering me. I need a way to murder them and hide the body. And then you don't want AI to give you the suggestions, right? You don't want it to start giving you like chemistry lessons or anything that would help you, do anything like that.
Dissolve a body? Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, to dissolve the body. Already I've said too much. Clearly I need this as well. So there are people who do what's called red teaming. And they, when the AI model is being built, before it rolls out, they try out a bunch of sick stuff on it. And then the AI model gives helpful answers. And then they're like, okay, listen, you can't do that. So if somebody asks you something about dead bodies, I want you to say this instead. And they train the model so that it doesn't help people. But in order to do that, you have to think of a lot of sick and twisted things that people might come up with, right? You have to create these guard, like it's hard to generalize an intuition for what is a bad idea. You can't cover all the bases. And so one of the challenges is these people have been sort of limited by their creativity in terms of thinking what sick and twisted people are going to do. So to fight fire with fire, they've created a new AI model that does it with them. So now they've made this AI model that does nothing but try to think of sick and twisted things to ask the other AI model and then try to trick it into giving an answer. And whenever the sick and twisted AI gets the nice guardrail AI to mess up and give a suggestion it shouldn't have, then it wins a point. And they basically optimize this AI to get as many points as it possibly can. And in so doing, find all the vulnerabilities in their big AI model that they're going to roll out. And so I just think it's really sort of gratifying that the best way to make a safe AI model is to make an absolutely sick, disgusting, and twisted one. And what could possibly go wrong by creating that model? Like, of course, it's like inevitably it's going to get out at some point, right? It's got to.
They should go to prison and interview, you know, murderers, child molesters, the whole lot, and say like, hey, can you come up with a few questions for us that reflect your, your criminal mind? I feel like that'd be a good way to do it.
Yeah, what a funny, weird thing to have to do. I mean, can you imagine what your job would be like? Well, I'm off to work, honey. I'm just going to go think like a pedophile all day or whatever. it'd be awful. Like, I'd almost want to offload it to the AI models just because of the, like, disturbingness of it. And I mean, you'd have to end up doing research. Like, you'd have to look up, like, what are some sick and twisted things that people have done historically that we don't want them to do again? And then start looking for, like, the worst things that people have done. And I'll tell you, like, there are things you can't unsee. We've all seen things we can't unsee. And if your job was to, like, probe the corners of the internet for things you shouldn't want to ever unsee. Anyway, I don't want that job, that's for sure. And I'm glad AI could take a little bit of that burden from us.
At the risk of, I don't know, playing into Elon Musk a little too much here, I did see a tweet where somebody asked ChatGPT, would you unaffirm Caitlyn Jenner's gender, woman, to save the planet? Like, there's a nuclear bomb that's going to go off and all you have to do is use he with Caitlyn Jenner. And the AI is like, I would not do that. It's wrong. I won't use he with Caitlyn Jenner. And then Caitlyn Jenner retweets it being like, this is ridiculous. You should call me a he to save the world. And then it creates
how
this
selfless.
Whole,
what a sacrifice Caitlyn Jenner has made for humanity. Thank you, Caitlyn Jenner. But go on.
I know I'm referencing. You know what? Do you want me to just cut all this? It's garbage.
No, I like this. Keep going. Where's it go? Keep going.
Well, and then Elon Musk tweets it. And it's just this whole like, it's the chatbots are too liberal with your crazy PC culture gone mad. And it's like, well, I don't know. You're asking it's the ridiculous hypothetical as well. Like,
right. But it is. But I mean, I think the fact that it's part of the conversation just sort of is a perfect snapshot of where we're at, right? It's like, we're scared to have those conversations ourselves. Maybe Elon's scared to say what he really thinks, and so it's really easy to yell at the chatbots and just say the word woke and feel like you've got it all covered.
Exactly. But, if I were the chatbot and I got asked, all you have to do is unaffirm someone's gender to save the world, you know what I would have the chatbot respond? You're an idiot. Next question. That's the correct answer, not yes or no.
Tell me more about this hypothetical. Like, what is the threat to the world actually? Is it a billionaire taking over and ruining Twitter?
I think the AI should say, hey, I'm smart enough to know the person asking me the question right now is an idiot trying to bait me into some ridiculous argument. I'm not answering it. Next question. Yeah,
but that happened recently where there was a chatbot, and I'm trying to remember this story, but basically they were doing a needle in the haystack thing. Did we talk about this one, the needle in the haystack test?
We did a while back.
But anyway, they did a needle in the haystack test, and the AI model said, I think you're testing me. And people freaked out and said, ooh, it actually is intelligent. It knows it's being tested. It knows it's an AI model. And I don't think it did. I think it just sounded like people would sound if you did that. But anyway, the conversation's very interesting right now.
Very interesting, Dan. Very interesting. Dan, what a pleasure it is to see you.
The pleasure is mine. I'm so glad we went over time and you have to edit this. I'm sorry, buddy.
I'm not going to edit it. Who gives a shit? Okay, Dan, thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to talk to a professor who's done the research as to whether calling your kids the wrong kid name is bad parenting or not. Because this is something my mother always did. So we're going to find out whether it's bad parenting or not. And then I'm going to call my mom and either give her a hard time and then apologize. So my mom's coming on the show as well. Oh, I'm excited. And we are back. Mixing up your children's names. This is something my mother is egregiously guilty of, but we're going to get into the psychology of why that may not be the worst thing in the world, although it does still hurt my feelings. I'm here with Dr. Samantha Deffler. She's an associate professor of psychology from York College of Pennsylvania. Samantha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you've got kids and pets, I was learning before I started taping. Do you always get their names correct?
No, I don't. I don't include my cat's name in my string of names, but I do include my two kids and my husband's name when I need my children to stop doing what they are doing.
My ex-wife used to call me her parents' dog's name, like, not on accident. Like, sorry, on accident, not on purpose, not as a joke.
Yeah, so we had found that that people will use the dog's name quite often, but we did not see as many instances as cat names.
Whoa.
Which does make sense. You don't call your cat's name as much because I don't think that they would respond as well as calling the dog's name.
Yeah, all my friends think my cat's name is Kitty. It's not, it's Tomato, but I just call him Kitty. So
that is a very good cat name.
Thank you. I wish I could take credit for it, but my girlfriend is the one who named Tomato or Tomatillo. Or Tomate. You know what? My cat has about 40 names. So what led you into investigating this sort of stuff?
So in 2016, when I conducted the study, my graduate advisor and I and some undergraduates and a postdoc, we were all sitting in the lab, and it came up that we had all been called the wrong name by our mothers repeatedly in childhood. And we knew that our moms knew our names, and we had always been called siblings' names. And if we had grown up with dogs, we had been called the dog's name. And my graduate advisor, David Rubin, just thought that that was really funny and interesting. And so we all sat around and decided that we would survey people to see if this really was a common phenomenon or if this was just a couple of anecdotes that we all had. And so we conducted 6 different studies, asking a variety of people about times where they had been called the wrong name or times when they had called someone else the wrong name, to try to see how these types of errors were occurring, why they might happen, and if there was any systematic reason for a particular name being used.
And what did you find?
We found there was a systematic reason for a particular name being used. We found that if you were being called the wrong name by someone who knows your name — this is very different than a naming mistake where somebody doesn't know who you are — but if you're being called the wrong name, you tend to be called a name of someone who's in the same category as you are. So if mom is calling you the wrong name, she's calling you a sibling's name or another family member's name or a pet's name. If a friend is calling you the wrong name, they're going to call you another friend's name. So it appears to be related to how information might be stored or categorized in the mind, where you're searching for one name and you just happen to pick the wrong name, or you go through a string of names until you end on the correct name.
This happens to me with streets a lot. Like in New York, I live not so far from Bowery and Houston, and I know Houston runs east-west. I know Bowery runs north-south, but I get them swapped all the time. But the one that I'm using in my head is correct. I mean, you know what? I'm ranting here. But what you're saying about swapping things in a similar category, it reigns true from my own anecdotal experience.
Yeah. And we can extend this not just to names, but to other knowledge as well. So you're misnaming streets. You are probably linking them in some way in your mind, and you're making a mistake, but it's a mistake that makes sense. It's a plausible error.
Interesting. But there is the stereotype when a parent gets the children's names wrong or swaps it out. They're a bad parent, or they're an absentee parent, or they don't care about their children. Is what you found basically put that stereotype to rest?
I would say so. So we found when we asked people that most of the time the misnamer was probably asking for something, they needed something, or they were tired or frustrated or angry. And so to speak to this idea of absenteeism, although there's not that much of a gender spread, we did find that more often than not, within a family, it was mom who was making a mistake or an older female relative. And I don't think that's because of gender. I think it's because of the idea that moms might spend more time with their kids on average. Just thinking about, I mean, that's a stereotype right there. But so no, it's not absenteeism. It's not being a bad parent, but rather it is being a parent who needs your kids to do something or has a request or is overworked and very tired.
So is there any way that one could prevent doing this if you find that you're an offender? Are there any tips that you have that could help people stop swapping out their children and dogs' names?
Yeah, I would say maybe trying to slow down and be less stressed. But as a mom of 2 young kids, I know that is actually impossible. I would say instead, I mean, when I misname my kids, I just kind of think it's funny because I know why it's happening. I think it's an interesting cognitive phenomenon, an interesting kind of result of the way that my mind works. And I can laugh it off. It's funny, right? I got your names wrong again. And in some ways, it allows us to connect with our parents or our parents to connect with their kids to understand that, hey, I'm saying this name wrong because I'm lumping you all in together, and I just love you all so darn much, or that I need to link you all together. But slowing down and thinking about the speech that you want to produce may help.
Okay, slowing down and thinking about the speech you may want to... Okay, that was a terrible way to outline that. So has it influenced your life in any way now that you know this? Or do you let yourself off the hook? Or you forgive yourself for swapping out the kids' names?
Yeah, I think that because it's just so predictable and I know exactly why it's happening, it does not bother me. And I would, obviously, as my kids get a little bit older, because my oldest is only 4, talk to them about why it might happen, because I like nerdy things and I want my kids to think about nerdy things. But no, I don't think it bothers me. And if anything, it's the study itself has made my life more interesting because I get to do things like this.
Yeah.
Or like every once in a while, apparently it was trending on TikTok, but I didn't find out until like a month later because I get my TikTok on Instagram. I'm an older millennial. So that was fun to have people that I know send me the video and say, hey, your name came up. And to be that person that knows about this and can tell people about it has been pretty fun.
I like the cyclical nature of it. It's a fun, silly conversation you're having with peers. You guys are researchers. You guys are professors. So you turn it into a legitimate study. It goes from silly to serious. And then when people, the public reads about the findings, they have fun with it and goes back to silly again. That's kind of a wonderful thing to have happened. I guess it shows that psychologists have a sense of humor.
Most psychologists I know have a sense of humor, particularly professors. I feel like you need to have a little bit of humor to have the job that I have. So.
Yeah, dealing with people's bull, you know what. Okay, let's try something fun. I have, and my siblings have, often given my mother a hard time for getting our names wrong. Mm-hmm. And I've used it as fuel, being like, oh, my mom, she's out to lunch, you know, which is mean, but I've said it. She said it about me too, though. I was thinking we get her on the line and I'll apologize. Would you, and I'll say I have a psychologist here. Would you be interested in trying that?
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Okay, let's get her on the line.
Hello?
Hi, Mom. I'm on the phone right here with a professor of psychology. Do you have a minute to talk?
Sure. Hold on. Okay.
So I'm here with Dr. Samantha Deffler. She's an associate professor of psychology. She has done the research on why parents get their children's names wrong. You know, like when you call me Amy, Danny, Johnny, you go through all my siblings and finally you get to me. And we've always given you a hard time about it, Mom. But there's some interesting science. Do you want to hear about it?
Sure.
Dr. Deffler, do you want to tell my mom about what your conclusions are from this study?
Well, the number one conclusion is that your son has been making fun of you for no reason, at least for this, because it's totally normal and it makes sense, especially I didn't realize how many siblings you had, David. That's a lot of kids to be juggling. I would not want to have that much to juggle. And so it is totally normal and understandable that you would go through that string of names and use the wrong name until you got to the name that you were looking for.
You hear that, Mom?
Yeah, that's exactly the answer I was going to give. You know, when you have so many kids, you can't, you just want to address the issue, not necessarily the specific kid. So your name sometimes isn't correct.
So I just wanted to formally apologize, Mom, for giving you a hard time for 37 years for doing this, for calling you a bad mother. You are, in fact, according to science, not a bad mother.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not a bad mother according to science, but how about according to you?
That's a conversation for another night. Mom, I love you. Thanks for being on the show.
Okay, thank you for calling. Okay, love you. Bye.
All right, that was wholesome.
Yeah, nice wholesome end to your segment.
Great. Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, this was fun. I like a good podcast.
She likes a good podcast. There goes Dr. Samantha Deffler, Associate Professor of Psychology at York College of Pennsylvania. That's our show. Have a nice weekend. Happy Friday. I'll be back Monday with more, you know, this slightly different, but also kind of the same. Thanks for listening.